Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Gumbo Yaya. Gumbo Yaya is brought to you by Buku Publishing and Sable Hunter. I'm Debbie Workman, your host, and tonight's topic is sex and modern romance. I'm excited to welcome my guests tonight. Spending the next hour with me are four amazing authors that you really should check out if you haven't already. Welcome to, well, Anne Mayburn is running a little late tonight, but welcome to Catherine Rhodes, Michelle Gwynn, and Sable Hunter.
Glad
hello,
to
be
hello.
Here.
Hello.
Hi, ladies.
Hey.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Just peachy.
Keeping warm.
Peachy.
Peachy.
Now, this will be the highlight of my day, so the rest of it hasn't been too hot, but I'm hoping for big things. Getting up on the sex already, aren't we? Big things.
Can you all just start out by maybe telling me a brief synopsis of your latest release, Catherine?
Oh, well, my latest release is actually a novella. It's called Passion Flames. And it's about, it's got witches and demons in it. And there's a little bit of cross-contamination going on there. So it's the beginning of what I'm hoping is a five or six novella series.
Sounds great.
Okay, sounds good. Michelle?
Well, I had two going at once with Buku, and that is my criminal erotic series, which is the first book is Exposed, The Education of Sarah Brown, and it is an international suspense and romance, erotic romance. It gets very steamy, and there's a great detective story in there, and it's located in mostly in Berlin, but it will take you from Texas through Barcelona and also into Amsterdam. So there's a little bit of some extra languages going on there, and we've got some very hot European men. But the story behind it really pulls you in and into a very underground and very dark place. I like to kind of try to highlight an issue when I write. And I do have the second one that is just the kickoff to the next series, which will be The Ghost of Cardiff, and the story is called Murder in the Vale. And it will center around a very old mystery, a murder mystery that happened back in the 1960s. And it will have to be solved by a very gorgeous and very irreverent priest who is trained in exorcism. And he gets paired up with a doubtful and rather jaded female detective, Sheila Leeds. So, I mean, what better than having sort of a Detective Thornbirds kind of thing going on?
Uh-huh. I remember that.
Sable,
how about you?
Well, I'll tell you about one that's just about to come out. It's called Justice, or Loving Justice, I think is probably what I'll end up calling it. And it's very near to being done. It's going to be the second in my El Camino Real series after Breath of Heaven. And the main characters in it is Justice and his love, Charlie Parker. And it's going to be a second chance at love. They were best friends growing up, and then something happened. They were torn apart. In fact, they had a night of passion, which he does not remember. He was drunk, and his sister had just been burned in a fire, and she came to comfort him, took him home, and they slept together. And she left completely because the next morning he didn't remember what had happened. So this is a story of them getting back together, and it's got everything in it from a major, literally a sinkhole that is swallowing part of the ranch, of babies that were jerked from their family's arms, to just two people who belong together from the very beginning, seeing that opportunity to reignite their passion and their love. And I have sit with this book, and I have cried with it, and I have fussed at these people, and the sex is hot, and I have fanned myself, but I'm having a good time with it. I'll be so glad when it's done.
How do you ladies determine the heat level of your books? Michelle, can we start with you?
Are you starting?
Michelle
yeah.
Okay. Well, I sometimes might go overboard in the initial writing of it, and then I'll go back and reread it and look at it and say, okay, did I really need to go that far with it, or do I need to go further? It depends on the story and the moment and the characters. I think, honestly, when you're writing, or at least for me, my characters kind of tell me what to do, and it's a weird channeling experience for me, but they tell me what needs to be where, and then I'll sit down and say, all right, who's the audience that's going to read this? They might want a little bit more spice. They want to read a little less spice, but it depends a lot on the situation, and I like to go for the realism of the moment as it pertains to the story. So that's kind of where I find it, and sometimes it doesn't need to be very hot at all. It could be more romantic. It might be more emotional. And it just, again, depends upon what the story is and the characters and what they're going through.
Okay. Yeah. How about for you, Sable?
Well, I have a fan base who expects certain things from me, so I attempt to deliver. I have, to appease the group that doesn't quite as much sex, I have toned some of mine down to a sweeter version. But I write hot sex scenes, and they're always, like I was telling someone, my brother was dating the other night. I was telling him, well, my sex scenes are about 12 pages long, and you get it blow by blow, literally. But that, I don't write ugly sex. I don't write sex that's gratuitous or clinical. Mine is emotional, and I want my reader to be able to feel it. I want them to be able to experience it right along with my characters. So I take my sex scenes very, very they're important to me. I take them very seriously. Like Ron always said when we were writing a book, he says they come for the sex, but they stay for the story. And so I don't stint. I lay it on pretty thick.
How about you, Catherine?
Well, I like to think that the sex is almost secondary to the story. Not that you won't be disappointed, but it's I usually write what the characters tell me. Sometimes I almost feel like a voyeur sometimes, but it's kind of determined by what exactly the story is all about. Clinical, I don't really like the clinical sex. I've read those. They're terrible. I also really don't like the wall-to-wall banging, as it were. And it's just really determined by the story what exactly the heat level is going to be.
My next question would be, why do you think, and Sable, you can start this out, but why do you think that love stories are so sexually driven today?
Well, I will give you my opinion. I think that times have changed, and love and romance has evolved in a bit of a manner. I think that used to, there was the whole dating thing where you dated a different boy until you settled on one, and there was there was rules and everything. And I mean, I can remember my mother talking about me and trying to tell me how and where and why. But I would no more marry a man that I hadn't slept with than I would buy a car I'd never driven. I think that would be a foolish thing. So I think romances have come along with that. Now you don't see 6 chapters before the sex begins sometimes, you know. The scene I'm going to read tonight is the first scene in the book, and it's a sex scene. So, you know, sex now has become part of romance, part of the whole dating scenario. We don't always wait until our wedding night to have sex. So it's a way of communicating. It's a way of showing affection. It's a way of feeling good. And I think our romances have evolved a bit to show that evolution in the way that we live.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Catherine?
I'm very inclined to agree with that. Dating today is a totally different game from even when I was dating 10 years ago. And it's just, you're crazy to try and think you're going to spend your life with someone you've never slept with, because you could be completely compatible in every other way, but if that bedroom component isn't there, it's not going to happen. And a lot of people today, sex is far more casual than it was years ago. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, because it is a pleasurable act uh-huh. that everybody can enjoy. So why restrict it to the marriage bed? And I think that's just the way the romance has gone. You know, I mean, viva la feminist revolution, you know.
Right, right. Michelle, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, my thoughts are all over the map, but I write a lot about sex anyway, because when I'm not writing novels, I'm writing a sex and relationships column on examiner.com, and I recently covered just this very topic as far as, you know, redefining sex in the modern age, you know, and my title was Women Getting It Their Way, Finally, and I think that has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, women are, we're becoming so much more of a secular society. More people are coming forth, especially women, and not letting things like religion define how they approach their sexual sides. And nor should they, because, you know, religion is fine, and what people believe is what they believe, but we were made to be sexual creatures, and it's part of who we are. It's wired into our DNA. So now we're seeing it so much more, and not just in books, but on TV. They're focusing more on what women want, what they like. Women are the aggressors. We have movies and TV shows now coming forth on premium cable channels that are showing women having their pleasure when you never used to see that before. They would show shots of boobs and butts, but they didn't show a woman having an orgasm and enjoying it or directing the sex. And now you see that, and women aren't seeing this on TV, and they're not afraid to speak up in the bedroom, which is great mm-hmm. because it has to be both-sided. It can't be one-way street. It can't be all about what the man wants. You know, men can go from 0 to 60, and boom, they're there. Women, we got to take the scenic route. We need the foreplay. And, you know, not every time, but a lot of the time we want that, and we shouldn't be afraid to ask for it. So,
exactly.
And I see that in society, and I see it in books, and I'm so glad to see it, and I hope we keep going in that direction.
Well, that brings me to my next question. So do you think the modern woman can be strong and capable in life but still be a sucker for old-fashioned romance?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, heck yes.
Yeah, yeah.
We love romance.
Absolutely.
There is nothing
so
more romantic than my husband walking in with a rose at the end of the day, you know.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, we all want to be courted. Want to be wooed.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. Sable, can you explain the difference between erotica and erotic romance?
I'll tell you from my viewpoint. Erotica
okay.
a lot of times will have a lot of good sex and can have a wonderful story, but there's not necessarily a love connection between the two. There's not necessarily a happy ending. Sometimes they're promiscuous. Sometimes they're, you know, out for themselves. Romance is entirely different. You can have the same heat level as erotica, but there's that longing and that connection and that walk into the room and their eyes, you know, lock, and there's that intention to be together and that longing for a future. And many times there's either a happy for now or, well, it has to be a happy for now or a happy ever after. And that's romance makes all the difference in the world for me, because I don't want to read a story where I don't have any hope that the two are going to get together. I get mad and throw the book against the wall, and that's bad on a Kindle. So I think erotic romance feeds the longing in women to have that one special person in their life. And if they don't have it at the time, I'll pick up a Kindle and read a romance. It's the second best thing.
Yeah. Does anybody else want to chime in on that?
I agree with that. I think women just definitely want to have that emotional experience. It's just every bit as important as a good sexual experience. It's every bit as important as, you know, having an excellent meal, a joyful laugh, whatever. We need it. And I think even men long for it. They don't admit it. Maybe it's not the first thing on their list, but men like to have that experience too.
Mm-hmm. I think that emotion is key for women too. There has to be some sort of emotional connection for it to really work.
Right.
Yeah, right. Catherine, how do you think that society's viewpoint of sex changed the modern romance genre?
I'm sorry, say the question again.
How has society's viewpoint of sex changed the modern romance?
Well, that goes back to the whole attitudes towards sex and why it's actually changed. We've become a more promiscuous society. I think Michelle said it just now. We've learned to just take what we want. It's a secular thing. We're not letting religion rule in the bedroom anymore. We're finally getting beyond our Victorian ideals of what sex is and what sex should be. And we're getting to just enjoy it. And it's that women are trying to break out of that shell, and a novel gives them that power. And it's a domino effect. We give them the power, they take it, they want to know what else they can do. They come back to the novel, they see what else they can do, they take it, and they run with it. So it's sort of a domino effect.
Mm-hmm. Fable?
Well, all of these years, men have had their outlets, and they have had their places to go for stimulation. I know women, we've come along too. There's Playgirl as well as Playboy. There's Cinemax Late Night as well as there's Playboy Channel. But in the romance novel industry, because of the way that society has turned and moved forward, so has the romance novel. And I do not like the mommy porn handle, but I will admit that when a woman needs to feel like she can remember that first kiss or remember that first sexual experience, she wants to have that warm glow, she wants to go to the bedroom and read herself to sleep and then have sexy dreams. There's nothing better than a romance novel to do that. And I believe that the way that we have viewed ourselves and been challenged to demand our, you know, equal rights or whatever in the voting or wherever else, it's also come along with sex. And why should the man have to be able to turn to something to get stimulation? We ought to be able to get it too. That's what I've always talked to my authors about, romance, how much the readers of romance are different from any other kinds of readers. People that read sci-fi or fantasy or things like that, they may be satisfied with reading a book a week or a book a month, but a romance reader, a woman, she can read a book a day. And that's because she wants to have feeling coming every day. Love is addictive to us. Affection is addictive to us. And a lot of times the romance novel will feed and fuel that and satisfy us in a way that nothing else can.
Yeah, I agree. Michelle, how did you find yourself in the role of erotic romance writer?
Well, I started with the column that I was writing, and I thought if I can write about sex as far as more from a clinical standpoint or answering people's questions, and I still get a lot of questions from people, especially about from fetishists. But I figured if I can do that, and I was such an avid reader of romance from an early age, why couldn't I write one? You know, I know what those feelings are. I know what's in my heart, what I want to experience when I read. So I sat down and I started writing exposed. And it started off really strictly as an erotic romance, and it quickly morphed with a story that bubbled up around it and just built, and it just took it to another level. But I thought, why not? Why couldn't I write it? Because I'm a woman. I know what women like. I know what I like to read, and I would like to try my hand at it, and I did. I actually had the best compliment from another author who read the book, and she said the initial scene between Sarah and Anthony, she said that was so beautifully written. She said it was pretty. It was sex.
That's awesome.
I felt really good about that. I'm so glad. She said I had to reread it a couple of times and fan myself. I said, good stuff.
Wow, that's a great compliment. That's always good for an author to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's where I started getting into it, and some people read it and said, oh, it's a little too much. Some people read it and said, maybe I shouldn't have read that at work, but boy, that was good.
Uh-huh. And Michelle, do you have an excerpt that you can share with us tonight?
I do, and it is from the next book in the series, which is coming out in a couple of weeks. This is the continuation of the story a couple years down the line, and the title of the book is The Evolution of Elsa Christ. If you're ready, I'll go ahead and go into
it. Yeah, we're ready for you. Go ahead.
All right. The scene set is at an art gallery exhibition, and we have the main character, Elsa Christ. We have her friend, who was also featured in book one, Paul Christensen, who is the artist, Elsa's new boyfriend, Luke Trommler, and a mysterious Russian. What are those red tags? She reached out to touch one attached to a canvas featuring a black figure poking a blue-eyed boy in the back with a lion's head cane. Paul immediately brightened. Those indicate that the paintings have sold. Looks like not many are left untagged. There are numbers on them. What do they mean? They mean that I purchased them. Number 12 is my number. A tall gentleman with silver hair and pale blue eyes spoke from behind them. Elsa turned and looked at the man whose sharp features and long nose sat on an angular face. His mouth was a thin line and his eyes emanated both power and cold detachment. His light gray suit had a patina to it, and the only color offsetting the gray palette was a light blue shirt. Even his tie was gray. Lucas reached out his hand in the age-old gesture of greeting. Erevchenko, are you enjoying the evening so far? The Russian refused a handshake and clapped Lucas on the arm, breaking their contact quickly. He was clearly uncomfortable with courtesies. Yes, Trommler, I am. He eyed the canvas and then turned to Paul. Truly amazing work, Christensen. Would that all artists were so blessed with such talent. Again, his gaze returned to the painting, completely unaware of the trace of offense that skittered through Paul's eyes. His talent, as the man referred to it, was really a culmination, an exorcism of very bad experiences that no child should ever have to endure. Evchenko backed up from the painting, and his glance caught Elsa. He turned to look directly at her. And what do you think, my dear? Is this not imagery disturbing? Does it impress upon you the deepest horror of a young boy forever lost inside a nightmare? He waited, his cold blue eyes boring into her. Elsa didn't understand art, but she understood people. And this man barely hid what she knew was a love of pain. I think it's sad. While I'm very happy for Paul and his success, to know people are drawn to this kind of thing shows that there's a festering disease of sick minds out there. These paintings weren't meant to be appreciated. They were meant as a means to dispel demons. She knew she'd let her mouth fly off without her brain, but something about this Russian struck her all wrong. Lucas coughed and interjected quickly. As you can see, the art has struck quite a chord with our Elsa, a true sign of Christensen's genius with a brush. Indeed. Evchenko's eyes remained on Elsa longer than she was comfortable with, and she was glad when he turned back to Lucas. I'll expect delivery to my home by tomorrow afternoon. He turned to Paul. A pleasure, sir. He nodded his head and then turned to walk away. I'm sorry, Paul. I didn't mean to belittle your art. Elsa felt contrite. Paul began to laugh. Not at all, Christ. I couldn't have said it better myself. He reached out and tugged a lock of her hair in a brotherly manner. That one there? He looked at Evchenko's retreating back as he walked out the front door. Is a very familiar monster.
That's very good.
That's nice. Waiting for that.
You're like, what happened?
You
what
that
happened?
In a couple weeks?
Yes, in a couple of weeks. We're going through doing the cover art.
Oh, great. We'll be keeping our eyes out for that on Amazon.
Yeah.
Catherine, what took you to in the role of erotic romance author?
Well, I heard about this book called 50 Shades of Grey.
Uh-huh.
And I picked it up. It sounds familiar. I picked it up, and I decided I was going to read it. And before this, I had really shunned a lot of the romance novels, even from when I was a kid and everything. I read mostly science fiction fantasy, science fantasy, alternate history, that kind of stuff. And I just kind of avoided romance for a lot of the euphemistic terms that people use, such as throbbing member. But I read the 50 Shades of Grey, and I got all the way through it, and I was like, well, I liked it and I hated it. So I started reading other BDSM novels, you know, looking for something much better. I found them very quickly. And then I'm like, okay, so where's the women? Where's the women in charge? Because I'm a very, very alpha female. So where's the women in charge? Where are the women? I couldn't find them. There are so few novels written about, at the time, there were so few novels written about female dominance. So I'm like, all right, well, I enjoy writing. I think I can do this. So I did my due diligence, my research, and I came out with Consensual. My friend read it, and she picked up the phone, and she yelled at me and said, where's the second half of it? Which happened with somebody else. They called me at 10 o'clock at midnight, screaming at me because they couldn't get the other half yet. But it just turned out that I enjoyed the more liberal sex in the modern novels. And I just went with it.
Mm-hmm. And did a very good job, too.
Yeah, you did very well.
Thank you.
Sable, do you want to tell us what led you into erotic romance?
Oh, yeah. I read Leslie Kelly's Slow Hands and started looking for more of that same thing to read. It just touched something within me. And I was from a small town. I didn't know anything about too much Facebook. That was before I even heard about Facebook. And I didn't know where to find anything. I read every Harlequin Blaze I could get my hands on, and then I decided, you know, I think I could write this because I had some hot fantasies I wanted to get on paper. And once I started, it was like a spring opened up and just started flowing. I think I wrote 7 books in about 3 months. And the sex started out a little bit mild compared to what I write now, but it was still hot and it was still sensual. Trouble was the first one that I wrote years ago. Unchained Melody, Wishing Moon, it's those that we're just now re-releasing. But I just wanted to put my own fantasies on paper, and I did. I have some fetishes that are dearer to me than others, and so my scenes usually are heavier in breast play, and they're heavier in maybe missionary position than some are, and I like an alpha male. I like the more submissive female. So I always write myself into the role of the woman, and I always have a particular type of guy in mind, and I just have a good time.
Yeah. Michelle mentioned a little earlier about fetishes, and that brings me to my next question for all three of you. What do you consider to be taboo in your writing?
Anything where someone is not consenting or is getting hurt. Don't write about children. No pedophiles as far as sex scenes. I mean, I wrote in the story, my story in Exposed is about a pedophile, but it never comes to the point where you're describing something between an adult and a child, because that's just something that turns off everybody.
Right.
That's terrible and horrible, and my goal is just to put a spotlight on a problem that we all need to be aware of so that we can try to prevent. But that and anything to do with animals, or anything, I mean, you can write rape scenes, but if you write them in a way where you're trying to shine a light on something and not advocating somebody should go out and get raped, That one's a little tricky, but ways to do that. But, yeah, but anything where somebody is not able to consent to be a part of it, that's the way I look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's generally my rundown, too.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't like humiliation sex, and I don't do golden showers. And, of course, I wrote a shifter, so I'm getting close to bestiality there, but at least, you know, he didn't change into a wolf before the act. But I just like things that are pretty and consensual and something that will turn me on. And so that's really, if it turns me on, I can write about it. I wrote rape scenes, but not as stimulation. I wrote them as part of the plot,
right.
Something that maybe molded a person into what they were. So I've written about things. I've never written an anal scene, though, and I intend to do that. I want an anal scene because I read them. And another thing I will write this year is a menage. I will have.
I was about to say, well, that's probably going to be a good place for that scene.
Yeah, because we'll have to have all holes filled, yes.
There better be some kind of oil in that scene.
Yeah, we'll have a little lubricant.
Oh, goodness. Oh, that was funny.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say just comically that, Sable, you should just have to use this. I'll have to tell you the story, and we've probably all been there. You know, that one time where you didn't want to do that, but something slipped.
An accident. I don't think mine could be done accidentally.
Oops. That's not it. Oh gosh. I'll get some messages about this.
Well, we did warn them, you know, I mean.
Yeah. Oh goodness. Catherine, do you have a scene that you would like to share with us?
Sure.
Okay.
This one actually from, it's going to be from Not Quite Juliet, which is actually my rocker romance. And this is actually their second go at it with each other. And they kind of didn't know who the other one was until they met the next morning. And they decided to go to lunch, and things got a little interesting at the lunch table, so they got a hotel room. And they're now in the hotel room.
Perfect.
Okay. Nick finally peeled me completely out of the stockings and let them flutter to the pile of clothes behind him. He looked at me, and as I stared at him, before I knew what was happening, he had yanked my panties clean off and tossed them over his shoulder. He pushed my legs apart and leaned into me, and I realized it had been a while since I'd groomed. Nick, wait. No. His hand ran hungrily down my stomach, where the light and slightly embarrassing happy trail had grown in from the last cleanup. No way, I'm not waiting. Nick, it's stop, kitten. He lowered his head. I want to do this. It's a mess down there. I finally bit the word out and fell back on the bed. I slapped my hand over my eyes and wanted to die. I don't see a mess. His finger gently touched the inside of my thigh, and my whole body jerked. I see a gorgeous woman spread out like a feast for me to enjoy. He ran his hand over the short curls, and before I could say another word, his finger had found my clitoris. Oh, shit. I shot up prone from the prone position. Nick! Not waiting. His breath brushed over me, and I shivered. I didn't get to taste you last night, and I want to. Sounds that went through my head at that point were akin to shit, blurred, holy crap, followed by a very cartoon-like string of punctuation. And then he ran his tongue along the folds of my sex, and I lost all possibility of thought. He was soft and teasing along the lips, and I flicked the bundle of nerves. I wanted to sit up and beg him to stay right there. He licked down one side and up the other while I felt his finger dancing around, lightning shooting through me. My nipples beaded without him even being anywhere near them, and I really wanted him to be all over them. His broad tongue licked me like I was an ice cream cone, and I sure was melting like one. I threaded my fingers through his hair, scraping lightly on his scalp as he moved, enjoying his feast. I couldn't complain about the banquet. Nick dragged his finger away from the anxious bundle, and I wept, and I wanted to weep until he replaced it with his tongue. He lapped me softly, running over my clit with insanely delicate strokes. and I was completely at his mercy, and I could feel my climax winding up to pitch me off the cliff. If you stop, so help me God. He didn't. The finger he'd been using to play with me was back, and this time he used it to stroke the entrance of my now-soaked vagina. He was so light with his touch, it was more intense than any of the sessions I'd had with Peter. I pulled my legs up and apart even further and still ran my fingers through his hair. A litany of swear words started falling from my lips. I was rushing headlong into my climax, and I was panting, trying not to twist and squirm under his attention. When he slipped his finger inside me, there was no turning back. He stroked in and out a few times, and then a second finger joined in. I gasped and pushed up on the bed. Oh, shit, oh, shit. I looked down at him. Nick, please make me come. Please, please, shit, make me come. I could almost feel his smile on me, and instead of answering, he pushed his finger inside and crooked him against the other nerves inside and nipped with his teeth. I exploded. Oh, yes, Nick, Nick. Another long oration of swear words invoking God and Nick followed, and waves of sheer ecstasy coursed through my entire body. My fingers curled into the sheet, grabbing it so I didn't fly off the bed. He crooked his fingers and kept me going, riding the orgasm hard. I could barely breathe, and all thought disappeared. Sweet Jerusalem. Gasping for air, I propped myself up on my elbows and watched him as he licked his lips and smirked and licked his fingers. I thought I was going to come again. Now, did you say something? I had your legs on my ears.
That's perfect.
Thank you.
I like that.
We like it.
Awesome.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Have you, I know Sable has, but Michelle and Catherine, have you ever received fan mail from your readers telling you that your books have influenced their sex life or helped their sex life in any way?
Okay. I have the gold star on this one. One of my friends called me up and said, I blame you. I'm like, what? She's like, I'm pregnant.
Wow.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah.
How about you?
He's 10 months old now.
Aw.
Aw. Well, see, it worked.
Yeah.
It's a genuine baby maker. I love it. Well,
Sable,
go
ahead, Michelle.
I was just going to say, I don't know about that yet. I haven't received that kind of a particular fan mail, but I can safely say that somebody I know who is another author has been forced to read some of the stories that I write, and now she's pregnant. So. So I don't know if that really influenced it, but
yeah,
it may
so
have helped.
So she just hasn't given you any credit yet, but
not yet. Unless she names the baby Michelle, then we'll know.
There we go. And Sable, you've gotten quite a few feedback from your fans.
Yes, I have. I get a lot of letters and messages and emails and so forth. And they come in two different kinds. I get ones that said, you know, I get thank you letters from husbands sometimes and letters that said, you know, you revived my sex life. You, you know, we read your books in bed. You know, we reenact your scenes. And I love that. That's what I write with that in mind is one of the outlets that I have for my imagination. But I also get the letters that says, you know, you nailed a problem I have. You know, if this woman has hope, so do I. Because I write also the more poignant side of things when they have the challenges and have to go through. And both of those things are equally, they make me equally feel that I've helped somebody. They're very satisfying. And I think that a lot of times that we're repressed in the bedroom and that we're afraid to ask for what we want, like we said earlier, and sometimes they can read the scene and go, do you think we could try this? You know, I had one woman, you know, I have my second book, A Hot on a Trail, is very much, he's very much a breast man, and the girl is very well endowed. And I went into a lot of more, you know, I don't even know what to call it here on the radio, you know, between the breasts type thing, and a lot of even nursing fantasies and things like that. So, and that's stuff like that I love. And I've had, you know, specifically talk about scenes that turn women on or their husbands, and hey, there's nothing better than to know that somebody is sitting somewhere in the dark with your book and they're thinking about you.
Yeah.
You can turn on the world. Book.
Yeah. Michelle, how would you describe your writing style?
Oh, wow. All over the map. I have a love for not just romance and erotica, but for mystery and science fiction and horror and contemporary pieces as well. So my style usually sits, when I'm sitting down to write, my mind just goes right into the story. It's like a, like watching a movie in my head, and I'm trying to put it down on paper. So, mm-hmm. And I can pause and rewind, and sometimes that movie will go in a direction I didn't expect it to, because sometimes your characters will drop a bomb on you in the middle of writing their dialogue that you didn't know was there. So mm-hmm. My style is probably crazy. Not really
a
sure what else to call it.
How about you, Sable? What would you describe your writing style as?
Well, I have a formula in a manner, and that means that I try to start out with a bang, be it sexual or be it something that's thrilling. I think we only have about two paragraphs to capture a reader's attention, and if we don't do it within those two or three paragraphs, they're going to put the book down and hunt something else. I also think that I try to write conversationally. I don't want my book to be so wordy. So if I can use a $5 word instead of a $15 word, I will. Not that I don't know the other words, but I want my books to appeal to a broad spectrum of readers. I try to address challenges in my book and try to address issues that I think that are pertinent to the time period or to the day so they can read the book and I want them to learn something. I don't want my books just to be entertainment. So I will go and research an area or the history of a place or the lore of a place. And I try to, so in my book, I try to offer them a whole myriad of experience. I want them to have adventure. I want them to go on a trip. I want them to be able to learn something while they're there. And I want the sex to absolutely blow their mind. So my writing style is methodical in that way, in that I have an agenda before I begin. I want my book to be marketable. I want it to hit a certain level of heat, and I want it to appeal to a certain demographic. And my demographic is female. I have mm-hmm. readers from the age of 18 to 88. And I have some men followers also, but I write for the female appeal.
Right, yeah. How about you, Catherine?
I don't know if I have a style. I just kind of, I'm a lot like Michelle. If I'm writing the dialogue, and they'll drop a bomb in the middle of something. So it's. I think somebody once called it a plotter and a pantser at the same time. Because usually when I start the story, I don't know where I'm going with it. And then as I'm uh-huh. going along, the characters will start telling me what I need to know to get to the end of my story. So, I don't know, the word higgledy-piggledy is stuck in my head right now. So, strange word, but very apropos for the way I write.
There you go.
Sable, do you have something you could share with us tonight?
I do. This is from Justice. It's one of the very first scenes in the book. The couple have been best friends since they were 9 years old, and I mean they did everything together. Until I got about 15, 16, and her crush became something she couldn't hide. And it got a little bit more than he could handle, and he asked for space. So they have he hurt her very badly. Not that they didn't want to be friends, but they still had the issues of a man and woman being friends, and one is sexually attracted and the other is not. But this particular night changes everything. He took her hand. Oh, let me get to the top. Hold on. Excuse me. I'll start in the middle of my scene. I can't believe you drank too much. This isn't like you. Just help me upstairs, boss. His voice held that teasing note she had heard so often years ago. We're alone, he whispered conspiratorially. Don't worry. Your virtue is safe with me. The second and fifth stair creaked like normal. Charlie didn't need to be told where Justice's room was located. She'd snuck up these stairs or shimmied up the drain pipe to his window more times than she could count while growing up. "Let's get you into bed," she winced. He was getting heavier by the second. "Sounds good to me," Justice murmured. "I'm beat." "You'll feel better soon," she assured him, checking the thermostat, making sure his room was warm enough for him. He obediently stood next to the big four-poster bed, looking to her like a cross between a sexy teddy bear and an Old West desperado. Justice always reminded her of Chris Pine and a cowboy hat. "You smell good, like a woman." Charlie had to laugh. "You are drunk." At his snort, she added, "At least something about me is womanly. Sure wasn't her shape." Charlie's unfortunate chest was as flat as a board. "There's not a damn thing wrong with you." His voice was low and raspy. Charlie shivered. "Never mind. Let me get the covers turned back, and I'll help you get your boots off." "I think I need help with the rest of my clothes." His whisper sounded a little suggestive, and Charlie blushed from her nose to her toes. "I think you need a cold shower," she made light of his comment. Charlie had seen Justice flirt many times, but she had never been the recipient. She had always been relegated to the role of best buddy. "Will you take one with me?" "A shower?" She choked back a laugh. Was he tormenting her on purpose? Not a good idea. Charlie fluffed the pillows and turned on the bedside lamp, anything to keep her eyes off the handsome hunk who was unbuttoning his shirt and eyeing her like she was a tasty treat. How many times had she dreamed of this moment? The only problem was Jose Cuervo was talking, not Justice. "Come here, I need to hold you." The teasing tone had left his voice completely. This sexy Justice was almost more than she could handle. "Hush, let me help you. You're making a mess." She stepped close to him, her whole body quivering at the sight of his gorgeous chest, lightly furred, muscles rippling as he struggled with the shirt, which was behind him now, still fastened at the cuffs. While she was so near and he was otherwise occupied, Charlie dared to do something she'd only dreamed about. She placed a small, quick kiss over his heart and felt hers jump in her chest. "That's good. Now kiss me up here." "Caught." She lifted her eyes, and he was staring at her with unmistakable heat. "Sorry." "God, don't be. I need you." He tossed the shirt across the room and began tugging at his pants. "Damn buttons." "Justice, you don't want me." The words slipped from her lips unbidden, even as her hands joined his, tugging to get his belt out of the loops. "Yes, I do. I want you. I need you." He bent his head, and she felt his lips on her neck. "Feel." He took her hand and moved it below his waist, and he was right. She could feel him big and hard. For her? Not possible. Unable to rest, she shyly cupped him, marveling at the way he throbbed in her hand. "I'm not your type. You said so. Remember?" Each word tore a little bit of her pride away. "You're my friend. A guy isn't supposed to lust after his friend, but I can't help it." His words were still a bit slurred, punctuated by kisses as he licked a path from her cheek to her collarbone. "Don't think I've missed those hot little nipples pressing against your shirt or that wild flush on your cheeks when we sit close. You want me, Parker." "We don't always get what we want, Justice." Charlie tried to muster up some fight, some strength to push away his hands, but she couldn't. She had wanted him forever. By age 15, she'd been aware of Justice as a man, and by the time she was 18, she'd burned for him. "I do. I'm not afraid to reach out and take what I want when I see it." God, he was potent. "All I've ever wanted was for you to be happy," she offered as she tilted her head to give him access. Free zones of excitement covered her skin. "I want your soft touches. I want you to whimper for the pleasure I can give you." Right on cue, she moaned for him as he skated his hands up under her shirt. "Justice," she gasped his name in prayer. "Your skin is like coffee-colored silk and your hair drives me mad." He ran his fingers through the long, thick, chocolate-colored waterfall. "It does?" Charlie was losing her mind. This was surreal. His hands were now working on her clothes. Soon she would be naked in his arms. "Yeah, I love the taste of you sugar cookies. You're sweet on my tongue." Justice kissed her neck again, this time sucking a bit of soft flesh between his teeth. God, he was so excited. He was seeing stars. "Are you going to let me love you?" Did she have a choice? Her mind might be wary, but her body was melting at his touch. Justice slipped an arm around Charlie and lifted her to him, his other hand making quick work of the remainder of their clothes. Wrapping Charlie's hair around his fist, he pulled her head back and claimed her lips with his own. Their first kiss. He had known this girl since he was 9 years old. She had been the singularly most important person in his life, including his family, and he had never dreamed she could singe him with such fiery heat. God in heaven, she had been worth the wait. "Kiss me back, Charlie." As if being set free, Charlie exploded in his arms. Her whole body shuddered, and she melded herself to him, fingers weaving through his hair, tugging its length even as she urged his head down so she could reach his mouth easier. "You feel good, Justice, so good." She strained up to meet him, going up on her toes. She would have climbed into his body if she could have. Moaning, he crashed their lips together, his tongue sweeping through her mouth even as his hands slid between them to find her breast. This was when Charlie froze. "No," she tried to stop his hands. "Don't." "Why?" He sat down, pulling her between his legs, his mouth lifting, seeking those tender buds which pushed out from her chest as if they were offering themselves to him. "You don't think I've seen these little nipples, wanted them? You may hide how you feel, but you could never control this little body." She shifted at his embrace, her arms coming up to cross over, shielding her breast from his eyes. "I'm too small. Not like..." "Shh," he hushed her, pulling her arms down, exposing her to his mouth. "Delicate, dainty, exquisitely feminine. That's what you are." He kissed the tender swell, and she arched into him as he swirled his tongue around her areola and sucked the nipple into his mouth. Just as she came, he felt his cock throb. God, this was good. He needed the small of her back as he nursed at her breast, his lips suckling the tender tip. Sit, he urged as he slid his mouth from one side of her chest to the other. Charlie did as he bade, easing her sept on his muscular thigh, which pressed hard between her legs. Oh, 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 she whimpered as the dual sensation of his mouth on her breast collided with the pressure in her clit as she began to move on him, riding him almost mindlessly as he sucked at her nipple. None of her fantasies ever came close to what Justice was doing, scoring her nipple with his teeth and lashing at it with his tongue. The pleasure was swirling around her, and she was dizzy with it, clutching his shoulders as he fell back with her on the bed. Justice lay beside her, but he didn't stop the incredible things he was doing to her body, his mouth ravishing her breast, giving each one of them the attention they so desperately craved. Of their own volition, her thighs parted in an invitation, and she felt his hand cup her heat, his fingers delving where no man had ever touched her before. Charlie lifted her hips in supplication as he rubbed up and down, massaging her pussy, driving her crazy as he speared up inside her, then swirled his fingers up to pleasure her clit. Just as she cried, unable to stop the heat which rose, swelled, pulsed, and exploded between her thighs. God, you're precious, he growled as he lifted her lips, his lips from her well-sucked nipple. Give me what I need, Justice, please, she begged, for what she didn't know. He spread her open and she arched, bucking gently as he pressed the hot, swollen head of his dick against the folds of femininity. This is what you need. I'm what you need. He took her by the waist and angled her body, draping her legs over his thighs, and he lowered himself to her. Slowly, he pushed his way into her. Charlie tossed her head from one side to the other, her fingers wrapped around the thick muscle of his forearm. This was her first time. Even through his alcoholic haze, Justice was aware of the need to be gentle, but she wasn't making it easy. Her tight pussy was grabbing onto him like a hot, hungry little mouth, sucking him an inch by inch. She chewed on her bottom lip and made the sweetest sound as her snug channel hugged the wide crest of his cock. He couldn't stop. She didn't want him to stop. Do it, Justice. Don't make me wait, she moaned. I wanted you so long. Her voice rose and he surged over her, pressing deep as he gave her the penetration she seemed to crave. Fuck, he groaned. You're so damn sweet. Charlie wrapped her arms around his neck and opened her legs even wider, spreading herself open like a butterfly, her hips undulating as she felt her femininity giving, stretching to welcome him. If there was pain, it was inconsequential compared to the sheer ecstasy of becoming his. Put your legs around me and hold on, he instructed her as he pulled out, pushed back, thrusting and pumping. There were just no words. The pleasure was so intense that Justice thought he might black out, and he didn't want to miss a moment. This was pure, raw rapture. I'll stop there before the climax.
You have a sexy voice, Miss Abel.
I get into it. Sometimes I read to myself.
I think every listener was going to get into that one. Wow. And that's coming
out when? It's coming out probably in the next 3 weeks. So.
And.
It'll
now
be
I gotta
fun.
Go. Do I still have Catherine here?
Did Catherine leave us?
Uh-oh.
Say again?
Catherine?
Oh, there she is.
I got a really bad connection.
Oh, there she is.
Here I am.
Good. We didn't want to lose you. I thought maybe you went to sleep while I was reading.
He was having the vapors.
Hardly.
Oh, goodness. And I was sending her messages, and she wasn't answering my messages. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Oh, goodness.
Let me ask you this just for fun. Sable, what makes you swoon?
Oh, I like the intense stare of a hungry male, hungry for sex. I like that when he nails you with those eyes and you can see what's on his mind, and then you can glance down and his cock is growing hard and shoot, just melt. It's to be wanted, to be desired. That makes me swoon.
Yeah. Michelle?
Oh, my gosh. I am a sucker for a man with really great manners. If he is a gentleman and a sexy gentleman, and a sexy gentleman with a deep voice, oh, my God, then I'm just in love. If he's going to, you know, open the doors and do all, you know, women may want to be sexually aggressive and own ourselves, but we still want to be women, but we want to feel like we're special, and that's important. When a guy can make you feel special and be incredibly sexy when he does it, ooh, the panties catch fire.
True that. Catherine?
Well, blue eyes, and a tight, tiny tone tush. And the manners are always important. You know, I mean, you can't. What's the saying? You catch more flies with honey.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you're gonna do all this, you know, women who allow their men to call them, you know, their bitch is just like, why? Why would you do that? That's not sexy. That doesn't make me swoon. It makes me want to call the cops. You know?
Yeah.
But,
that's, it doesn't bother some people. But, yeah, I'm on the same page with you. I don't get it.
Yeah. No.
No, that's no good.
Somebody
definitely
has the giggles. Is that Michelle?
No. Not me.
Sable, when you think of sexy, what's the first thing that comes in your mind?
Broad shoulders.
Broad shoulders. Michelle?
Well, I'm kind of looking at it right now. It's a gorgeous male model named Brock Hearn who has long, and forgive the pun, sable brown hair. He's 6'7" and gorgeous, and he's playing a guitar. So maybe it's the creativity, maybe it's the fact that he's looks like a Greek god, or a Greek god playing a guitar.
I'll take the Greek gods. Well, I'll play something if he needs to play.
Sable's good with a microphone.
Woo!
Catherine?
His name is Daniel Craig, and as long as he's in a suit and carrying a large gun, I'm good with it.
Right. Isn't that like James Bond or something?
Yes,
okay,
James Bond. I am a sucker for a suit.
Is there anything else that you ladies would like to add before we close out tonight? Anything else you want to share?
I'd like to say that I'm proud of all y'all. I mean, y'all are the things that both of you write are hot. They're sensual. They're sexy. They're entertaining. And you're able to combine a good story with hot sex. And who could want more than that?
Oh, thank you.
Now, see, that's that good manners thing.
Yeah.
That's an awesome shout out. Michelle, do you want to tell the listeners where they can find you?
For myself, they can find me, you can definitely find me on the Buku website. You can find me on Amazon.com under Michelle Gwynn, and you can find me at michellegwynn.blogspot.com. That is my personal author page. And you can come and check me out all those places. And I'm very interactive. Shout out and say hi.
Awesome. And let me go ahead and shoot out some information here before I go over to Catherine. You can find Buku Publishing at BeauCoupublishing.com or at Facebook.com/BukuLLC. Gumbo Yaya can be found at Facebook.com/GumboYayaRadio. And Buku Publishing's releases this week include Remembering Hell by Helen Downing, The Black Blossom by C.J. Anaya, and Palessa's going to kill me if I don't pronounce this right, but I think it's Iyube Girls by Palessa. And all three of those titles can be found on the Buku website and on Amazon.com. Catherine, can you tell everybody where to find you?
Well, I'm on Facebook at Facebook.com/CatherineRhodesAuthor. You can find me on Twitter at Mistress_KAYR. I'm on Sue now, too, which you can find me under Catherine Rhodes on that one. K Rhodes might come up. And you can find me on my website at CatherineRhodes.com.
Okay. And Sable?
I am everywhere. I don't even know where all I am, but you can sort of track me down at sablehunter.com, at BukuLLCPublishing.com. I'm on Facebook and Twitter, and the girls have me in about a dozen other places, and so I think you can get all those social media connections off the website.
That's right. thank you all for being here tonight. I have thoroughly enjoyed spending an hour with you. And for our listeners, tune in next week when my guests will be Cynthia D'Alba, Cora Seaton, Paige Tyler, Sable Hunter, and we might have one or two more surprise guests. Ladies, thank all three of you for coming in tonight. I have enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Everybody have a good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.